Hello, everyone. Welcome to my podcast, Common Grounds. My name is Grace. I'm on solo episode number 2 of my Whole 30 audio diary. I'm on a little bit of a no-edit challenge since this material is like a little bit more time-sensitive. Although, depending on whether or not I fart audibly in this, I will reassess at the appropriate time. So I wanted to check back in. It's about the 1/3 point of the 30 days that I've been through and kind of let you know what I've learned so far, how it's going, and then also, like I promised in my initial episode, talk a little bit about my criticisms of Whole 30 that I had going in, the ones that I still have, or the ones that I've like reconciled. Yeah. For those of you that don't know, I'm also doing this with my sister and her friend Jackie. So you can catch some of their hilarious commentary, in a quote of the day type of format on my website in the blog section. Yeah, it's been super, super nice. I should just say that to start out. Doing this alongside people, I'm also doing it with Jessie, as I said before as well, but you know, she lives in New York, I'm out here in Colorado. So we have this little like Facebook group of other people, individuals who are doing it too. And that's helpful for when you're like, mostly like, oh my gosh, look at me. I'm the best. I made this one delicious meal, you know, in 3 days. Everyone congratulate me for it. But also to be like, oh my gosh, I'm having a hard day. Am I the only one? Or like, any suggestions on good breakfasts to make? Because I'm just eating 2 soft-boiled eggs every day. Stuff like that. So yeah, I should say like having 2 other people in the house that are doing it with me makes it so much better because we are the majority, so we can kind of like dominate my parents in that way. So pretty much all the dinners that we've eaten together are Whole30 approved. And that's so nice when there's not like a bowl of pasta on the table that you have to just not even look at or think about. Yep. So 10 out of 10 would recommend doing it with a friend who lives in your same house, if even possible, or just in your same city that you can like go out with and experiment on how to order off a menu. So all that to say, the first 5 days or so was pretty miserable. I think we made 2 fatal flaws, and the first one is that we went shopping to prepare, but we didn't purchase anything that was like really enjoyable to eat. We pretty much just got the basics, kind of like laying a foundation. You know, we just got like simple stuff that we knew we could eat to like set ourselves up for 5 days. The amount of cashews that we bought was absolutely pathetic. Like I could have eaten that many cashews in one sitting and we were just like, oh, yep, looks great. Yeah, I'm sure that this will do us just fine. Totally did not. It was a nightmare. And so we spent the first 5 days, which are by far the hardest, like in, if not physical, very borderline pain because we were withdrawing from sugar. Like physically had physical withdrawals, some of us. And then we're trying to make these like awful dishes, just combining these raw ingredients that we had into the semblance of something edible. And we had no rewards for ourselves whatsoever. So that was just like, you know, we were like really craving dessert, something small, something sweet at the end of the day, or, you know, something in our coffee in the morning, and we had nothing else to look forward to at all. So that was terrible. The other thing that we did really not well was that we wouldn't eat consistently. So when we woke up in the morning, if we weren't hungry, we just wouldn't eat. And I think it was a combination of like, you know, again, the totally unappetizing food that we had in the house. And then also the, like, yeah, this like desire, not really strong desire to eat any of it. And then also not having anything prepared. So, you know, if we didn't really feel hungry, we didn't really feel like making anything for ourselves. We just didn't. And, so then we'd go sometimes to like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then when we're finally hungry, it's like, oh my gosh, what are we going to eat? We don't want to spend 25 minutes preparing something. So we just like eat like a piece of celery, or like cook a chicken breast, you know, just really pathetic, sad meal situations going on there. I wish I had actually recorded some of the things that we like ate for dinner that first week. So just after the first 5 days, I like went to Sprouts and I stocked up on some stuff like sunflower seed butter and sugar-free bacon, dates, almond milk, just things that we could eat that were a little bit more exciting than your standard run-of-the-mill fresh fruits and veggies and eggs. So that helped a lot. And then also just like we're getting like a little bit more creative with our meals. You know, the first 5 days was a lot of just like, oh, like you have to catch yourself before you eat anything. I also BTW put like 2 spoonfuls of rice just completely on accident, unknowingly, one night while I was cooking dinner, because I was preparing rice for my parents, and my sister was like, what did you just do? What did you just eat? And I was like, oh my gosh. And I was just chewing, I just had rice like still in my mouth and I didn't even notice it. So like, it's kind of exhausting too to think before you eat anything, like, wait, can I eat this? And so we were still internalizing the guidelines basically in those first few days. So since then, it's been a lot easier to like get creative and be like, oh, we could, you know, make meatballs with the ground meat and have that with the spaghetti squash and tomato sauce that we just made. And we also learned about the additives that we could have, which is very helpful just because that first day in Walmart, we also went to Walmart to go grocery shopping for the first day, which was terrible because everything in Walmart has sugar in it. And then if it didn't have sugar in it, it had additives. And there are just 5 that you're not allowed to eat on the Whole 30. It's like carrageenan, soy lecithin, MSG, sulfites, and one other. I can never remember all 5. It's some kind of, oh, no, food starch. Yeah, maybe like cornstarch and food starch. Maybe just cornstarch. Don't quote me. Okay. So also, you know, getting a little bit more educated about the kinds of additives that we were allowed to have meant that we could purchase a lot more processed foods. And so, yeah, the last 5 days have just been much more enjoyable. We've gotten more creative and more proactive with our meal planning and prepping stuff over the weekend that we can eat throughout the week. And so, yeah, so we don't have to spend as much time doing prep for every meal. There were a couple days there, even like in the second 5 days, you know, the latter half of this first 10-day period, where I just felt like I would like wake up, make breakfast, spend time figuring out what I was going to have for lunch, make lunch, and then like an hour later, it's time for me to start making dinner. And then cleaning up from dinner. And then I was like, cool. Like one day, I'm in between jobs right now. And one day I actually, all I did the whole entire day was like make or prep stuff for the Whole 30. Yeah. So that whole spiel kind of brings me into the criticisms that I had of the Whole 30 going into it. And one of those I would genuinely say is like time. Something that they say, and like Melissa Hartwig is one of the creators of this program, and she's like a very sardonic tone to her writing. And so one of the famous things that has totally stuck with me is that she says, like, this is not hard. What you're doing is not hard. Beating cancer is hard. You know, what you're doing is just like, it's easy or it's normal or whatever. And in some ways that's true. Like, you know, like not eating something isn't hard. It's inaction. So you're fine there. But it's also overcoming addiction. And also it's spending so much of your time doing prep. And so I am super privileged and blessed to be living with my parents in a full house of all other adults, of which I barely have to take care of any of them. And so I share responsibilities with them. My living expenses are small to none. And I'm also not working a ton right now. So if I had to work multiple jobs, take care of anyone, I can't imagine spending the amount of time that I do right now on just like figuring out what to eat and then preparing those ingredients. And I'm sure that there are plans and strategies to do this stuff that people have come up with, but you know, just like spending free time cooking a lot of food for yourself isn't my favorite. I'll move on. Another criticism that I had coming into this, I would say obviously straight up front, is how meat heavy it is. So as I talked about a little bit before, I have been like a small amount of meat eater type of person for the last like 6 years, at least probably. I'd say that's when it started. I just believe that if more people ate fewer meat, our planet would be in a much better place. And I feel that we elevate certain foods in our culture. And one of those is meat in America for sure, as like, you know, in terms of what it's going to do for us. And so we regard meat so highly because of all of its like supposed health benefits, in terms of like protein and certain minerals. And we just think that like, if we don't eat animal protein, we're going to die. And I think that attitude is kind of changing, but things like Paleo and Whole30 really uphold a lot of meat eating. So that was definitely one of my first thoughts when I thought about doing this. I remember like when I was younger, we ate meat at every single meal. And even if we had eggs, we would have bacon or sausage too. And when I was a little bit older, I remember asking my mom, like, why did you serve us so much meat? Like, what were you afraid of? And she said, muscle dystrophy. And I was like, oh my gosh. First of all, look at my legs. My legs alone could feed my entire body for months with the amount of muscle that they have in them. So I think I'm okay there. But that's just like a little bit of an example of like how we hold meat in like such high regard in our country. My other criticism of it, besides, you know, the time intensive part of it and the meat intensive portion, is also the fact that they've designed the Whole30 to eliminate certain allergens or maybe or like problematic food groups that can have really detrimental effect on people depending on their genetic makeup. But I have certain friends and family who have sensitivities to things like eggs and really acidic or really fibrous foods, like the FODMAPs, if you've ever heard of those, that those can really bother people's gastrointestinal tracts. And so I was like, even if you did the Whole30, if you have, you know, one of those problems, it's not going to identify it. And then you're just going to have spent 30 days like ruining your life. I'm just kidding. to not really gain any conclusive knowledge about your personal health, which that's kind of how they talk about the Whole30 in the beginning of the book, is like you're basically conducting a mini science experiment using existing knowledge and data and then testing them on yourself to see what's true of you, since everyone's bodies are so different. But it's also like it really kind of leaves out those groups of people who can't eat some of the things that are core to the Whole30 like meal plan. I think that those were kind of like my big three that at least I want to talk about right now. And those are three that not three. I shouldn't say the time thing. I know that they provide like a meal plan structure in the book, and I'm sure that they include like prep stuff in there too. But I think that just like, you know, spending a lot of time on the food that you eat is definitely a luxury and a privilege that is available to some people, and it's really not available to other people. So I think that like, that's kind of like a non, you know, that you just have to like change your priorities in your life so much to make that happen. And some people have that mobility and flexibility and some people don't. But the other two, you know, in terms of meat, they encourage people to find the best quality, most environmentally friendly and local meat that they can for everything that they eat. But, you know, again, that like really ups the cost. That ups the time factor for a lot of people. That kind of meat really is not available widely and easily everywhere in our country either. So I'm excited to reintroduce soy and grains in my diet personally and start relying on those for more of my protein intake. But I do really appreciate them acknowledging that that's an important step to take when you are consuming a lot of meat or any meat at all. But yeah, again, the reality is that like, you know, cows just produce more methane than cars in the US. That's just a numbers thing. And so the only way realistically to change that reality is to eat less meat. That doesn't depend on what kind of cow. A cow is a cow. All cows, I would say, fart a comparable amount. Maybe when they're not eating grain, they fart less. I don't know. That's actually a great question. Next time on Common Grounds, cow farts. But the last criticism that I had in terms of the other allergens and sensitivities, they do include a page. I like accidentally happened upon it in the book while I was flipping through, because I'm reading through the book, but haven't finished it yet, unfortunately, is they have two pages, one for people with autoimmune diseases. So that's people who have to avoid eggs and certain kinds of vegetables, which are called nightshades. And then also people with IBS. And IBS affects an incredibly large amount of women in the country. I think it's like 50% or something. So yeah, huge reality. They tell you what not to eat, and that's helpful. And then they also include this thing that's like, by the way, you might have to like eat on the whole 30 for 90 days and also avoid all these foods in order to like repair your GI tract. And then they don't really give like a lot of ideas of what to eat. So going through it, even like I don't have IBS, but it's still discouraging to read the list of things that you're not supposed to eat and then be like, oh my gosh, like what is a person who has IBS who's also, you know, because they do say like do the whole 30. So you're cutting out, seems like, most of what humans currently eat. And then being like, okay, there you go. Good luck. So I think like a little bit more support for people who fall in those categories would be awesome. And I'm sure that there's a lot of stuff online. I would hope that there's a lot of stuff online via their forums and their Whole30 websites that go into that a little bit more, those like populations. I would say that my outstanding, well, in terms of what I'm going to talk about today, my biggest criticism is that they say their like fundamental belief, something that they outline at the beginning of the book, and by they, when I say they, I'm talking about Dallas and Melissa Hartwig, who created this plan one time when they just decided to like eat healthier, and they fashioned it around this, and obviously it's grown out of that and like really expanded, but that's who I mean when I say they. They say every single thing we eat is either making us healthier or unhealthier, and they really like underline that choice that we have, which I read this quote by a person and I promise you I tried to go back on the internet and find it. I know that I read it in like a printed publication though. And when I was searching for this, I like the feed was just full of blog posts and other articles sharing the same sentiment, which is that, like, you know, we are so intent on categorizing, especially our food, into areas of good or bad, whether we use vocabulary that says good or bad, or healthy or unhealthy, or things you should avoid, whatever. We're honestly, like, puritanical about that. So that, you know, everybody wants to know. The thing that I read specifically, he was like, everyone wants to know whether or not coffee is good for you. But the truth is that coffee isn't good or bad for you. It's just coffee. And so, you know, coffee's a good example because we get so much, I feel like coffee is kind of like the go-to example for a lot of people. There's so much information about, like, the FDA approves 5 cups a day, but, like, people, like, caffeine is, like, maybe a carcinogen, and it just really seems like it goes back and forth. And so everybody's kind of like, oh my gosh, what do? Do I drink coffee or not? Even though obviously we're all still drinking just as much coffee as we ever have. Although I do have to say, one side effect of the Whole 30 that I was really, really not expecting is that I drink so much less coffee now. Like, I thought I was gonna be very dependent on it. And I find myself, I've never done this before in my life, like, leaving half drunk cups of coffee of my first cup of the day. I, like, put them in weird places. Like, there's one downstairs next to my bed right now. And then I found one in the pantry the other day. I truly don't know, like, why I've been putting them in these places. And that's it for a different time. But yeah, like, not even drinking as much coffee as I plan on drinking, which is outrageous. Anyways, so just this idea that, you know, like, not every food is making us healthier or unhealthier, I think, is a reality. And, you know, I think that the insistence that everything that we eat makes us either healthier or unhealthier, especially because of the fact that, you know, not all food is absorbed in the same ways in our body. It depends so much on everyone's genetics. Different foods are metabolized at different speeds. We eat some things that are, like, from the earth that hurt our bodies. We eat some things that never came from the earth that we don't even understand yet. So to make that claim, I think, creates a really ironically unhealthy attitude and approach to what we eat and how we eat it. I think that a lot of what Dallas and Melissa are trying to teach and impart in terms of a relationship with food is healthy, but I don't like that idea, that like underlying principle that, like, everything you eat is either making you healthier or unhealthier, because I just don't think that that's true. There, I said it. And then my final critique of it isn't of the Whole 30 itself or with the creators of it, kind of just like the movement and understanding of it in general, which this is true of, like, any movement or, like, large pervasive philosophy or lifestyle or anything, is that everyone takes it, not everyone. Everyone takes it at face value at one point or another. So I definitely took the Whole 30 at face value when I initially heard of it. That's made me write it off too. Some people take it at face value and then they do it. Like, they do the Whole 30 just having read the guidelines, like the bare minimum on the website. Yeah. So some people, like, anyways, and my point is that there's so much more to it than just, like, an elimination diet. And there's so much more to it than losing weight. There's more to it than just identifying what you might be sensitive to. There's just more to it than we can know when we know what we're not supposed to eat, know what we're allowed to eat, and then when we, like, just hear about the experience from someone else. Yeah, I think that that's probably one of the most harmful parts about it. I think if you hear what the Whole 30 is, you think it might be good for you or it might help you lose weight, and then you decide to go into it head first without really understanding, like, and because there's a lot of nuances about it, like, and then it sounds like this crazy system of rules and, like, deprivation, like I talked about before, about, like, how, oh no, actually you can't have any baked goods, or you can't have, you know, like processed date syrup, but you can't eat dates. It's just because like there's this whole philosophy behind it about what they're trying to get people, how they're trying to get people to think about food and their relationship to it. And just doing like the, just being legalistic about it, or just like carrying out the particular set of rules for 30 days, I don't think necessarily like gets you the benefits of the whole thing. Oh my gosh, I've really ranted. This was supposed to be like 20 minutes long. Okay, but to tie it all up and just share like how I've felt over the last 10 days, any differences or like whatever, I haven't felt either that bad or that great. My like second day, I experienced the hangover, and mid-afternoon I was just like, I cannot go on living like this. And I think that was a large part because I wasn't eating enough and enough like healthy fats to keep me sustained throughout the day. And I also haven't felt that great. I had like one day where I was just like pure energy from like 6 o'clock in the morning to 12 o'clock at night, and it was a little bit creepy. And I've also heard that like the third week, or I read that the third week is when like the magic happens. So far I'm unconvinced, but I would say that the biggest, I also haven't felt like hungry like throughout the day. So sometimes, you know, I'll be like peckish and I really just want to eat a handful of cheese and I can't, and that drives me a little bit crazy. But I don't spend more of my day hungry now than I did before. But I would say that the flip side of that is that I also don't spend as much time thinking about food as I did before. So I'm not like always thinking about like, ooh, what do I want to eat? Or like, what am I going to eat next? Or I really feel like this. And then like trying to eat something and being like, no, that didn't really like satisfy my craving. What else am I going to eat? I spend so much time like standing with the refrigerator or the pantry door open, like obsessing about what I'm going to eat next. So I really enjoy that part a lot. I feel like I'm a lot more focused on the things that are important to me. I don't spend a lot of time feeling like I overate or that I feeling sluggish from something that I just ate. Also to say though that the poops are few and far between, and that is depressing to me because usually I'm a very consistent pooper, and that's just really been a sad thing in my life. That I don't really know if it's because of like the amount of potatoes that I've been eating or the amount of meat, probably. Actually, I'm sure that that has to do with it, but it's a little sad. And my tummy does feel rumbly like kind of a lot. So stay tuned to find out more about the state of the tummy. I'll definitely keep you updated. My next post, I would like to talk a lot more about one specific issue, and you're just gonna have to wait and find out what that is. Okay, guys, thank you for listening. Catch you on the flippy flop. Bye.